Welcome back to another season of Remotely Speaking Up. Join me, Dr. Rochelle Haynes, and my special guests every week as we discuss how the way we work continues to change and how companies and their people can continue to thrive no matter where and how they work. For more on our podcast, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Remotely Speaking Up. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to another episode of Remotely Speaking Up. And this week we have quite a special guest. Every week we have special guests, but this week we have yet another brilliant person with us. Thank you so much, Rich Wilson, for joining us. Rich is joining us from Gigged AI. He's the CEO and founder of Gigged AI, which is a technology platform that allows organizations to hire freelancers and also hire internal talent using AI as well as machine learning. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you got it. Perfect.
Okay. Right. So Rich, I'll hand it over to you because I really want to know about how your platform works. One of the things that we've seen with companies becoming more aware of external talent and different types of talent is that it's bred a lot of innovation in terms of how we recruit, in terms of where we look for talent, and in terms of how we view talent in general. So tell us a bit about your vision behind Gigged AI and what really spurred that on.
Yeah, of course. Again, thank you for having me. I know you used the word on the LinkedIn visionary, so you made me blush.
Oh, you're a visionary. I always have visionaries.
I'm not a visionary. I'm just an old school recruiter trying to use new tech. In terms of the vision, it comes really from the background of myself and my co-founder. So my co-founder was a freelancer for 12 years. And I was a recruiter for 12 years. So we kind of come from, opposing sides, right? So I was part of Allegis Group, the largest privately owned staffing company, one of the largest contingent staffing firms in the world through AGS's RPO and MSP programs and tech systems contract business. I was mainly within tech systems. So I started as a 21-year-old trainee recruiter back in 2006. Worked my way through the ranks. But I was very much a recruiter working in big companies, taking contracting freelancers and putting them into contract roles, SOW roles, and large managed projects. So I come from that world, right? I come from the old school of getting a rep on the phone, qualifying a rep with a customer, then going back to the recruitment team and going, right, this is what we've got, this is what we need, let's go and find. And we would go and find the best two or three contractors or freelancers. We would get them in front of the customer, we'd set an interview up, we'd get them the job, rinse and repeat, right? So I come from that world.
Yeah.
So my vision, a big part of my vision, you know, and I spent a few years at Gartner in an advisory position working with CIOs, was that I really wanted to automate a lot of that process. Not all of it, because I am not an anti, a lot of people think I'm an anti-recruitment person. I'm not, right? I think recruiters are incredibly important. But there are parts of the job which can be automated. And that is the creation of jobs, in terms of whether it's a statement of work or whether it is a contract role, the creation of that can be done better by automation. The matching can be done better by automation. I think a lot of the other stuff, the relationship management, the dealing with issues, only humans can do that well, right? I don't believe we're going to get to a stage where technology can totally replace the need for those people skills that you need in a two-way hiring process, because in a hiring process, there's always a hiring manager and there's always a person. There's two people at the end of that process, right? So there's always going to be some issues. So that was really my vision. Could we automate, simplify parts of that recruitment process? My co-founder, Craig, he had been a contractor working on with large banks all his career. He'd been a BA, been a software developer, and he was really frustrated at how he was always found for roles. He didn't really want to speak to recruiters. And then he actually ended up working for a consultancy, and he actually was that frustrated. He created his own platform to try and hire a pool of freelancers. So he started to go, I think I could build my own platform. And I'd already had an idea. Hey, I'm keen to try and build a talent platform. We're from the same very remote part of Scotland, right? So we're not from, you know, London or New York or anywhere sexy, right? We're from a very small village, 35 miles south of Glasgow. But we knew each other, and we kind of got together, and we're like, what you're building is kind of what I'm trying to build and what he's building, you know. And we thought, right, let's try and build a platform. And this is where the Gartner part came into it. Gartner were very focused on internal mobility and how do you look internally? But yeah, no internal mobility platforms had that freelance side. Mm. So looking internally before you go externally makes sense, right? But then not being able to look externally. So that was really with the combined vision. Could we build technology that would help companies look internally?
Mm.
Then look externally to the open talent. And we see open talent as much more than just a contractor or a freelancer. It could be a side hustler. It could be a boutique consultancy. We're a big believer of that talent pool shouldn't just be an available contractor, because there's lots of different talent that can do different pieces of work. And then what we tried to do underpinning all of that was having a very transparent model, because a lot of issues in the staffing industry and even with talent platforms is like hidden fees and, you know, a lot of shady dealings. So we thought, can we just bring transparency to it, explain how we make money, explain what the fees are? Like, it's not a charity, you can't do it for free. And we were like, right, we explain how we do it, but we also try and make the process for either the talent and for the client as simple as possible. So we get people think this offends us, but people always put reviews on our technology saying, this is such a simple platform. We love that, right? For us, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it super simple. You go to the website, you're like, they do open talent, internal talent, or both. Cool. How do I hire somebody? I post a gig. That gig I will be asked, you know, 8 questions. That will then create my gig. I will then get 5 matches. I can then speak to them and get proposals. I can then hire, press the hire button. All of the compliance, IR35, 1099, all of that will all be done by ourselves and our partners, and to try and make that whole process. So for us, it was really to take away the pain, the frustration, and the time that we had felt at either side of the coin, right?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And a couple things there that you said, especially one that will be music to the ears of several recruiters out there, is that AI is not there to replace them. You always, as you mentioned, you will always need that human connection in the recruitment process. But I do like also that you've mentioned in terms of looking for talent internally, because this is one thing that I've heard. Sometimes I suggest software to clients that I'm working with. They ask for software for talent management, talent development. And one of the things they're often keen to do is to find a way to identify how people internally have the skills that they need for upcoming roles and upcoming projects. And it sounds like Gig AI is very good at sort of collating those internal skills or storing them so that you can pull on them and then match them to the appropriate freelancer. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And, and not every customer does that. But once what we found with some of our larger customers, they kind of then are like, right, we're using the freelancers, that's cool. But we're then looking at a solution, they're looking at one of the big US companies, and we're saying, well, actually, you don't need to do that. We can just give you the ability to look internally. It's the same UX, it's the same look and feel of what they've been using already. It's just adding an extra talent pool in there. That's all it is, right? It's just a different talent pool. Yes, it's your internal permanent talent pool. Yeah. So, and there's loads, once you can capture that talent pool, there's lots you can do with that. You could share talent with other companies. You could do secondments. There's lots of different things you can do with that talent. But we're not trying to run before we can walk. Even getting a company to hire open talent and being able to look internally first, that's a big step for a lot of companies.
Absolutely.
So we're focusing on getting them towards internal or open, preferably both, but one or the other, right? So we give our, when we're doing our sales to the customers that we work with, we do a discovery, and then we're like, right, this product would be the best. We're not just turning up saying, right, we're an open talent platform, here you go. We are really being like, right, what's your issues? If it's retention, if it's layoffs, hiring freezes, right, it's probably more of an internal play. But if it's skill shortages, we've got an AI project, we don't have anybody for it, we're spending a lot of money with consultancies, but we want to maybe reduce that spend. All right, cool. That's when we can talk to them about the open talent. But and that's been a really difficult thing to build, right? I think building two different platforms at once, I'm not sure if I would do that again.
That's
Like we've
true.
done it, but what I didn't realize at the time was that you've got two product market fits, two different customer bases. Again, now that we've done it, you've got two different products that are solving different problems. But the process of getting there as a small startup was pretty tough.
Well, I can imagine. What do you find, or what have you seen in that journey to be the big disruptions to the talent sourcing process that has kind of redefined or defined the services you offer?
So the easy thing would be say AI or Gen AI, but I don't think it's that. I think the disruptions have been social and economic, have the biggest. So, if you look at where we are now from an economic standpoint, post-COVID, we have seen massive hiring, massive layoffs, massive hiring, massive. I think that is now the norm, right? So I think there's a lot of feelings that these layoffs are just a cyclic, we've got two or three of these big layoffs. I think that is the way we are now, right? I think companies will continue to try and tighten their belt and try and keep costs or fixed costs low and keep a lot of spend in that CapEx budget, for projects, programs, but costs that can be turned off or turned on. Whereas if you think about it, the biggest cost to any organization is a permanent headcount. So I think from a company perspective, there's obviously now then the Gen AI and how much jobs that's going to replace. That is an element. But I think economically, we're now in a place where we're going to see boost, we're going to see lots of mini recessions, and then huge spikes in and then drop. So I think that is going to leave that smaller pool of money to be used for permanent hiring. And then I think on the other side, for the talent side, again, post-COVID, people have changed how they want to work, and especially those that are in the Gen Z phase, right? So I think that's what 67% of Gen Zs will not take a permanent job as a first job anymore. They'll take a freelance job. That's like, if you think about that, 2006 when I joined the kind of the workforce, taking a freelance job wouldn't have even been a thing. Like that would not have even be considered, not as your first job out of college or uni. And then you've got a lot of people wanted a lot of freedom, right? Freedom comes up a lot. People from London moved to remote Scottish Islands during COVID. They're still there, right? But the bank they're working for say, well, you now need to be back in 5 days a week. Move from the paradise they've got in a remote island, are they going to, or Portugal or wherever, are they going to move from that paradise that they've always wanted back to the city? Unlikely. Which then creates a lot of skilled people at either stage of the spectrum, right? You've got people who are 21 who want freelance, and then you've got people who are 50 plus with great skills, but they're not going to go back to their corporate job 5 days a week in London. So I think you've then got a boost in talent that want to work in a flexible way. So that way, you've then got smaller permanent demand, and then you've got an increasing pool of people who want to work flexibly, whether that be remotely, whether that be as a digital nomad or whatever that may be. But you can see that's exploding, right? So in the US have obviously been, you know, the freelance open economy, gig economy has been pretty embraced well, you would say, in the US and in parts of Asia. You would say in the UK, not quite, right? I would say there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, I was lucky to talk with John Windsor at the event in London a few weeks ago, and it is night and day. When you hear the case studies that he was sharing and the UK case studies I was sharing, mines were tiny compared to NASA, Deloitte, you know. So there's definitely a lot of work to be done. But yeah, I think it's socioeconomic which is driving that. I don't actually think the technology is the disruptor yet. I think it could be, but I don't think we're there yet. I think it is good old social political.
Yeah, I do think the context is driving a lot of fear, from the cost of living context and companies trying to cut their budgets, to, as we were discussing earlier, that fear around IR35, not so much IR35 itself, but the fear of it is really making UK firms a lot more cautious. And you're very, very right when you look at the US context, because they're bolder and they're further along in the way in which they use freelancers and how they prepare for them as well. It's funny you mentioned John Windsor, because I saw him in London a day before you, so I missed you by one day. I was trying to see how I could stay over. But you're very right. And it's something that needs to be addressed in the UK, because some of these, the socioeconomic and the social changes you've mentioned, in terms of, for example, changing work expectations among not just Gen Zers, but our older workers, or those who transition in the pandemic, it does allude to a problem further in the future, because I have heard a lot of companies, you mentioned, making these demands. Boots just made a similar announcement. You have to be, everyone has to be back in the office from 9 to 5. And what's happening? People are choosing to leave where they can, which is leaving a larger talent gap. So open talent is going to become not just a real option, but for some companies, if it continues, maybe the only option.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is where certain geographies will be clever in terms of how they do it. I think, you know, there was a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal. And then there was another article, which is very similar, from the Freelance Informer 2 or 3 weeks ago. The Wall Street Journal was all about how US companies are starting to look at UK-based tech talent as a nearshore development center, so they can get you know, English speaking, not massively different time zones, a bit, but not enough to be bad, and they can tap into that talent a lot cheaper than they can in the US. And then the Freelance Informer was talking about an Ipsy review that said there was 24% of freelancers in the UK are out of work due to IR35, and they're going to start looking at the US for work. And I think that's what we could start seeing. You know, a lot of people working in other geographies out with their own, because of, you know, quite draconian rules, right? I think return to work directives are definitely going to just ramp up, right? We're just going to see that. We're going to see that ramp up, and you know, and I think if you're asking a freelancer to come in, you know, to the office, and especially 9 to 5. Monday to Friday in an office, and that person wants to work outside IR35, you can kiss that goodbye, right? Yeah. That's not a freelance job. That's a perm job disguised. Mm-hmm. And that can't be, you know, that doesn't make sense for anybody. So, I think we've definitely got, especially in the UK, right? I think in the UK, you know, I'm not a big political person, but I think in the UK, we're not doing ourselves any favours just now about how we help freelancers and how they work. Like, we're really not. Mm-hmm. Like, the IR35, the way that's been dealt with, like, as I said, the reforms have just made it more difficult. They've created fear, they've reduced demand, and they have really, it's really not made, like, it's not made any sense for anybody. There's no way HMRC have made more tax money from this change than they did before. There's just no way. So I don't get it. So I think things like that are really, you know, we really need to think about, especially when we're trying to make the UK this Gen AI hub. Well, what's the point in a hub if we are driving all the talent that we have away from the UK? So,
and
other geographies like the US, will take advantage of that and go, well, I can get a generative AI or a data scientist or a Python developer in the UK. I'll let them work remotely at half the price.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
but I don't know if that's a good thing either, but I think we'll see much more of that. I think we'll see the global aspect, and that's where talent platforms can play a role in that. Because most recruitment companies are not a recruitment company. You're hiring in the US to the UK, you're not going to see that much.
No.
But a talent platform can always be on. A talent platform can work across boundaries, work across geographies, work across time zones. So I think we'll see more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, as you said, it's the fear of it's the fate of those who don't get on board. Let's put it that way. We can delay and delay the process for as long as possible, but where we have our younger upcoming workforce having change in demands, then we have to operate differently to meet those demands. But can you tell us, I'm just gonna backtrack a bit. Can you tell us a bit more about internal talent marketplaces and how you build them using AI?
Yeah, sure. So internal talent marketplaces is a relatively new concept, but it's a pretty simple concept. In terms of when I was a recruiter, the first thing we were always trained, the first thing is, hey, when we are qualifying that rep with a customer, we would always ask them, are you sure there isn't anybody internally before we take the contract role? Because a lot of the time we would take a contract role. We would find contractors, and then they would end up saying, "Oh, actually, I've got somebody internally I didn't know." So we would always ask and said, "Who do you have internally?" But only, and this is from Matt Alder's book recently, only 5% of companies look internally before they go externally. It's only 5%. It's not a lot. So the concept of an internal marketplace is it almost, and this is how we ended up building ours. It's again identical to building a freelancer talent platform. It's almost identical in terms of you need to have a way to capture demand. You need to have a way to match demand. And then you need to have a pool of talent. But most companies already have a pool of talent, but they are not, that pool of talent is usually stored in a Workday environment that nobody ever uses, or it is based on an Excel spreadsheet. So the concept of the internal talent marketplace is just taking your 200, 300, 200,000 permanent employees and creating a marketplace where people can actually be matched to them globally, especially again, post-COVID. Companies were hiring all over the place, right? Developers in Brazil, data scientists in India, not freelancers though, permanent employees. That's how companies like Deal and Remote grew massively through, Deal what turned into a billion-dollar unicorn in 2 years because of people doing that. But the concept of internal marketplace is, well, okay, well, how do I know who's got Python? Who do I know that's got Java 8.1? I don't. So the concept of internal talent marketplace is that it is able to look internally, and there are big ones out there. You've got Eightfold, you've got Glow, you've got Fuel 50, but what we found was none of them actually owned their own freelancer pool, right? It was well, that's what we thought. Well, could we bridge that gap? Could we help internally? But the best internal marketplace in the world is only ever going to get you a 30% match at best. So it's only ever going to have a fill rate of 30%, just because. A 30% fill rate is really good, and there's a lot of cost being saved. But then you've created, the 70% of gigs that you've created, because all of these internal, they're not permanent jobs, they're shorter term projects. So I need a business analyst for a piece of work, and then I've been like, right, Rochelle is available in London. She just finished up another project internally, and she's going to do a bit more work on a BE project. Cool, make that match. Hey, we need a BA. There's nobody available. Rochelle's took another job internally, or just got a promotion. All right. Well, what do we do? Our platform, you can go. There's the top five freelancers with the BE skills that are available just now within London. they've got a choice. They can make an informed decision between internal and external talent all in one go. But the concept is really simple. An internal talent marketplace is a lot simpler than a freelancer marketplace as well, because you're using AI to help with the job creation. You're using some form of machine learning algorithm to match on a skills-based algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're using some clever APIs, but there's no money changing hands here. And that's where a freelance marketplace becomes difficult, because a freelance marketplace, you've got to do 1099, W-2, you've got to do a IR35 determination, you've got to pay in dollars or pounds or whatever. Whereas an internal, it's kind of beautiful because all you're matching is the internal. There's maybe an internal bill somewhere, but really it's just helping find somebody, because there's nothing that people hate more. Let's say I'm a BA and I've got BA skills, but I want to be a project manager, and I've just done my accreditation to become a project manager.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the cubicle next to me, somebody's just hired a project manager permanently. That's because they didn't know I just went through my PMP accreditation. But if I was in a platform and I had put up that I'd just done my PMP accreditation and I was matched to that, I may have got that job.
Yeah,
my motivation is now went up. My motivation now, I didn't get a job I wanted because I didn't know about it, and they've hired somebody else. Then, you know, and then I got a call from a recruiter saying, "Hey, look, we've got a job as a PM." And then all of a sudden, I leave the company.
And yeah, then, it really highlights that need to capture organizational skills, because I find that's one thing that companies still, I find, do not do very well. We do have scenarios where, yes, sure, the performance appraisal and the KPIs and meeting those objectives, yes, but in terms of those individual skills that you mentioned, Python, coding, and those things, to me, that's what makes that process really work if you really want to leverage your talent marketplace.
Yeah, and that's how you do skills-based hiring. Everybody's talking about skills-based hiring. The best way to do skills-based hiring is get an internal talent marketplace in and do skills matching. That's the easiest way to start it. It doesn't need to be all of this convoluted, you know, long-term processes. It's as simple as, I need some Figma design skills. Who in my organization has Figma design? They might be a developer, but loves UX. Well, it doesn't matter, because they're just going to do the job, do the task. They're not going to do it for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do skills-based, you need to then be able to create a task or create a gig, as we call it, right? That's all a gig is. A gig for us is, you know, most of the projects on our platform are an outcome-based gig. They're not a long day rate. You know, they are usually, I have a £10,000 budget and I need to build 4 wireframes in Figma by the 31st of April for a project I'm doing. Instead of it being, I need somebody for 3 months at £500 a day to do XYZ. All right, cool.
Yeah.
But that's not what you need. You're actually needing a specific task done.
It's not very efficient. When you think about it. Yeah. So what would you say to companies then who are still hesitant about diversifying their talent sources or bringing freelancers on board?
Yeah, I think you kind of need to embrace it. I think I think not to be as scared as you think. So the main things that I hear, the main objections are IR35. Well, every talent platform worth their socks is working with an IR35 specialist to make sure that they're inside or outside IR35. We work with a couple of specialists and they all ensure their decision. So we're taking the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we're indemnifying that. So the IR35, actually, there is no reason to be scared of IR35 unless the company that you're working with just say, I don't worry about it. As long as in the contract there's a provision about who is doing the IR35 determination and what they're doing, if whether inside or outside, then there's no fear of it. So IR35 is the other one. There's always the other one around what happens with IP non-disclosure. Just put in a contract between the organization and that. Usually a one-page document, which is either an NDA or an IP agreement. Put that in place and that's all you need. It's not as convoluted and as difficult. And there's a lot of companies that make a lot of money about making it all sound very Dakota, but we'll do your end-to-end EOR, but it's not as difficult. You know, you need to define it well, you need to find the person you want, you then need to get the contract in place, you need to do the IR35 determination, you need to get them invoiced, and then you need somebody to make sure that the work has been done as well as you want, and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And in our, we have an open HR framework. And a part of that, the part that we slot IR35 into our fairs around that is our open rules room, because we have four components: rules, tools, skills, and thrills. And we often say with the open rules, it's a matter of getting familiar with the, not just regulations, but the processes, the mechanisms, and the services that are out there, similar to your partner with Gig AI and your partner services, that can allay those fears around compliance and risk. So it's not, I think a lot of companies see it as there is a barrier that stops them from moving forward with freelancers. And that's not the case. It's a matter of understanding what you need to do and getting help where needed.
Yeah. And look, they also, yeah, I was talking to a customer this other day. They're like, yeah, I used to hire contractors from a recruitment agency because I know they're going to take care of everything else.
Mm.
It's exactly the same with a talent platform. A talent platform as a legal entity is no different than a recruitment company. Of course, we don't see ourselves as a recruitment company. Again, we're doing tech as the enabler, and that we can scale quicker because we're using tech to do a lot of the heavy lifting. But from a business, you know, client, how we legally deal, it's the same. It is the same. There is no difference between having an MSA with a talent platform and an MSA with a staffing firm.
Mm-hmm.
There is no difference.
Yeah.
And then and the way that they contract with the contractor or freelancer is no different than how a talent platform. It's exactly the same business model. It is just delivered in a different way. Instead of having a recruitment consultant manually getting your rec and sending you CVs, you're doing it all on a piece of software. That's the only difference. All the legalities and the entities are exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fear of the unknown. But I would say, we got to wrap up in a couple of minutes. And one of the things I would say is big takeaway from this session is don't fear IR35.
Don't fear it. Not there to be feared.
Exactly. Well, Rich, thank you so much for sharing the depth of your knowledge. Thank you for sharing about what you do with Gig AI, about how Gig AI is helping us in terms of navigating talent sourcing, especially applying technology to that process. Thank you so much. But before you go, can you tell us, what do you do when you're not gigged AIing? What do you do in your spare time to wind down and keep that balance?
That's a good question. So I used to, my story used to be cooler. So I used to do a lot of MMA.
Yeah.
So I don't really do that anymore, but I do a lot of CrossFit, and I've got a 9-year-old daughter who loves horses. So I just drive her around places all the time. So but mainly CrossFit, but I will admit I've always been a kind of a staffing geek when I was in the staffing industry. So yeah, I'm always reading, like I'm reading, you know, I don't even know what I'm reading just now. I'm reading Slack's book on the future of work. Like I'm literally just always, I'm a bit of a geek with it. I kind of, so yeah, I don't switch off as much as I do, but when I do, I try and do mixed martial arts, CrossFit,
and driving a 9-year-old. Did you win it before you go? Did you win any MMA fights? Were you a champion in your region or so?
I was probably the world's worst MMA fighter. So what my wife would always say, all the gear and no idea. I looked the part, right? I could look the part, but definitely not a professional. I used it as a stress release, but definitely there's no chances of me leaving the open talent world and becoming a UFC fighter anytime soon.
Oh, that's probably for the best. I think you're more valuable in the open talent space as well.
I wouldn't be valuable in the MMA anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Rich. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing with us about just new ways of talent sourcing and also how to navigate some of the things that we see as barriers around talent sourcing. So I really appreciate that. And if our audience wanted to get in touch with you or to find Gig AI or to reach out to you directly, is that something they could do?
Of course, LinkedIn is the best form of that. Just Rich Wilson on LinkedIn. I'm super active. I love LinkedIn. That's my best form of building a business.
Yeah.
A lot of the people I've met in the industry have all been through LinkedIn. So yeah, message connect on LinkedIn's always the best.
Awesome. I always say LinkedIn is a very powerful tool. Thank you so much, Rich. And if you or audience would like to know more about how you can navigate the future of work and how you can put those key infrastructures in place and really start to redefine your mindset and way of thinking about the future of work, just please feel free to reach out at contact@crowdpotential.co.uk and continue to follow us on Remotely Speaking Up. You can find us on Instagram at Remotely Speaking Up and look out for our post every week on LinkedIn. We've had another brilliant guest in Rich Wilson from Gate AI. And this is saying goodbye for this week. Thank you so much, Rich, for joining us. And thank you for our audience for tuning in for another week. Take care. Bye. I hope you enjoyed our podcast series. To find out more, follow us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram or go to www.crowdpotential.co.uk for our services. Until next time.